We get to celebrate something really beautiful today. But sometimes we're not quite sure what to do with Easter. You know what I mean? There's like two types of people out there, yeah? There's the Sunday people. And some of you know who I'm talking about, and you're like rolling your eyes right now, right? So we need something bright. This lime green, is that bright? Yeah, all right. Let's go with purple. There we go. All right. So we have the Sunday, people out there. And the Sunday people are all about Easter. They're like the victory people, right? The people who like, yes, all the time, I have victory in Jesus. It is great. Everything is good. And there's a lot of joy. Sometimes I have to kind of ignore the pain in the world or unresolved issues in my own life, but there is lots of joy and victory, and so I kind of gloss over the rest of the week of Easter because I just really, really want to get to Sunday morning. And then, so these are the people that are really only able and comfortable with the victory part of this weekend. And then we have the Friday people, so we're going black. Now, some of y'all are Friday people. And if you're a Friday person, you really don't know what to do with Sunday because you want to celebrate, but you really can't get there because it doesn't feel genuine. Because all you see when you look up is the pain in the world and the brokenness and the fact that well, things aren't victorious. People will still die today that shouldn't die. People will still be heartbroken that shouldn't be heartbroken. And so we don't know what to do with this, but we end up not feeling like we can even go into any sort of celebration because we're confronted with the reality of death. It feels like you're cheating, right, when you get to Easter. And you're like, well, how can I sing about God conquering so many things when I look around and I say, well, it doesn't look like it that way. This is why we have to journey with Jesus. We use the phrase, you know, life path, even the name of our church was about the fact that it is a shared experience. We often find ourselves on the road with Jesus. And when we do that, we find ourselves moving alongside Jesus in the last in his entire life, but specifically in the last steps of his life during this time of the year. On Friday night, this room was transformed. We had where you're sitting right now, we had this enormous prayer labyrinth, and up on the white wall here, we had different images that created space for reflecting on the brokenness of the Jesus story of Friday night. The one piece that we kept up is a piece that Rachel thankfully put together for us. Thank you, Rachel. An interactive art piece where people got a chance to look into the image and describe what they felt, what they thought, what they experienced. And people could go in the back and paint what they were sensing and experiencing. And so you see our paintings all over the place. And the beauty of it is I'm not going to tell you which ones were painted by adults and which ones were painted by children. And you can just look at whatever you think is the most beautiful one. That was mine. So we spent time diving into that. But one of the things, if we want to celebrate fully the news of what Easter is, but we feel like we can't get out of the dark, we have to not be afraid to first dive in. We've been talking about violence for 6 weeks. What does it mean to be people, to be peacemakers in a world that is full of violence, and violence in all sorts of different ways? The violence of isolation, the violence of our words, the violence of our anger, the violence of injustice, so many things that we do and experience in terms of violence. What does it mean to follow Jesus' way of peace in this, and what does it mean to embrace Jesus during this final week as the one who sets things right? The word that we use for setting things right is shalom. is the Hebrew word. Translated, eirene is the Greek word that we see in the New Testament. But it's this idea of wholeness and completeness. And we've talked about this week after week. The idea that when we're not just talking about the absence of physical violence, when we talk about Jesus bringing peace and calling us to be people of peace, we're talking about the presence of things as they ought to be, which is totally different than the absence of bad stuff, right? So if someone is living in poverty, that is not shalom. That is not the way God designed us to function, where we all are able to have enough and care for one another. If someone is in an experience of abuse, there is not shalom there. It could be emotional abuse. It doesn't have to be violence where they're being beaten. That is violence. That is a lack of shalom. Jesus came to bring wholeness to us, to our world, and to the future, which we'll talk about in a little bit, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But as we reflected on this whole experience of Easter and Good Friday on Friday night, we had to be willing to dive into the dark first. One of the quotes that you'll see that I thought was profound that came up on the board there is, the first step of this weekend. Someone reflected and said, "My humble king dies, and he pleads for my forgiveness." What a love is this. When we think about the weekend story, there's two movements that are absolutely profound. And the first part of the weekend story is that Jesus absorbs the violence. When we're willing to start by diving into the dark, there is something to be celebrated in the darkness. And what we celebrate is that Jesus, as he experiences the alienation of a violent world, the reality of betrayal, all the worst that humanity has to offer, essentially, he hangs on the cross and he speaks a word of forgiveness and he says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." These people, they don't get it. They don't understand. The way he said it on the triumphal entry was, which Dwayne talked about last week, was, "You don't understand the things that make for peace." This is a continuation of that comment. When Jesus sees Jerusalem and he weeps and he says, "You just don't understand." And then he says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't get it. They don't understand how valuable each person is. They don't understand the way that brings life and all of this." So the first thing that Jesus does is he absorbs a cycle of violence. And what he does is, instead of bouncing it back, which is our natural inclination, if you push me, I will push you back. If I have someone stand up here and I just begin to put a hand on their shoulder, the natural instinct is going to be to lean into it, right? We resist what pushes us. And Jesus doesn't. And he absorbs the violence. It's the first step of this amazing, amazing journey. But even when we acknowledge that something extraordinary happened, even when we acknowledge that there was something metaphysical that we believe in faith happening with God not just experiencing the violence of people, but the internal violence of what the power of sin and destruction does in us, how it moves us away from God. Jesus experiencing that. Even when we acknowledge that Jesus does something extraordinary, he's still dead. And the disciples are in a really, really, really dark place. So before we get to Sunday morning, we have to kind of remember what the experience was. We're going to look at John for a couple minutes, in one of the most amazing passages in all of the scriptures. Do we remember that this is more than a religious story? Do we remember that this was a friend who people watched die? I really think that we sometimes completely miss the boat on this. We think about the disciples and their experience and how they were just full of, "Oh my goodness, we thought he was the Messiah maybe, and we had these hopes, and we were looking at the scriptures, and we celebrated him as king, and that didn't happen." It is way more than that. You have a bunch of people who have just been walking with a man for 3 years, daily. The most compelling person they'd ever met. Their friend. And their rabbi. And they've watched him die. And they've not done much about it. Peter's the scapegoat, Peter's betrayal, right? You know, when he says, I don't know the man. We were told that the disciples all fled. Everybody ran away. So on Friday night and on Saturday, what you have is this experience of massive guilt, massive loss, massive violence, complete unrest in every single way. There is absolutely no shalom in this situation. They've seen injustice happen. Jesus was killed unfairly. They've had violence in their own heart and lives when they denied or ran or fled, all of these things. We have a dark, dark, dark moment here. How's that for an Easter message? Yeah, yee-haw! We're getting into this. Okay, but here's what happens, and here it comes, okay? In John 20, on the evening of that first day of the week when the disciples were together, we can't get further than this without noticing that there's something important going on here. By the way, John, every word he says means something. He's trying to communicate things. And the first thing he tells us about this little experience is that this happened on the first day of the new week. John gives 7 major signs of Jesus' divinity throughout his book. Completeness, 7 major miracles that are supposed to be a sign of the kingdom. And that ends with the resurrection of Lazarus, a dead guy that Jesus brings back to life. The resurrection of Jesus is the first miracle of the new week, the 8th day. And so there is a new thing that is starting on this day. So we are supposed to notice that this thing is happening on the first day of the week. There is something new that's starting to occur. The disciples were together with the doors locked. Important note, okay? Just make a mental note about that. Lock the doors in your mental picture. For fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them. Doors were locked, Jesus not present. Doors remain locked, Jesus present. We're supposed to notice this. Something has changed. We are in a new world now. This is the first day of the new week. What does Jesus say? Peace be with you. In literally the most unpeaceful situation and week and day ever. The disciples are together, they're afraid, they're terrified, they're mourning, they're lost, they're feeling despair. Boom, peace be with you. After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Now, peace be with you is a common greeting. So if I say peace be with you, it means, hey, how are you doing? So he's using a little bit of a wordplay, and then, as if to give them a little bit of pause, Jesus says again, a sentence later, peace. Peace be with you. It's available now. Really, I'm making things whole. It's going to be okay. As the Father has sent me, I'm sending you. And he breathed on them and he said, receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone's sins, their sins are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. Powerful statement. Not the point of our message this morning, but the authority that are given to the apostles is a great conversation to have. Here's the real story. One of them wasn't there. We're not told why one was missing. Oh, by the way, that breathing on them, keep that in mind. We just talked about a new week, right? The God breath into Adam was the creation of a new human. A new species. Jesus breathes on his disciples. Beautiful. All right. We just don't want to miss any of the great stuff in this story. Someone's missing. We don't know why Thomas was missing, but we can guess he wasn't like out buying bread. What we can guess is that something was going on in Thomas that was really dark, that was really hard. Thomas gets a bad, bad rap. Thomas was the one earlier when Jesus was heading into Jerusalem and he knew about the political unrest. Thomas was the one that said to Jesus, really? You're going to Jerusalem? Okay, let's go too that we might die with you. This was like not a wishy-washy guy, okay? Thomas gets a terrible rap. So Thomas is missing, probably, I'm going to just guess, because there was such deep pain associated with what happened, because Thomas was the one who committed to death. And then he didn't. And then it was Jesus dying, and Thomas is just standing there looking on. Like Peter saying, what have I done? Thomas is in a really, really dark place. He can't He can't be with them, but they have this moment, this experience. His name was also Didymus, which means the twin. That's never unpacked. I would be fascinated to find out more about this. As a dad of twins, I would like to know if Thomas was a twin or if that was his nickname because he was like a doppelganger with Jesus or something like that. So, Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples. So they came and they told him. Here's the moment, right? We've seen the Lord, Thomas. It's unbelievable, like mind-blowing. We can't even get all the words out of our mouth. We came and he saw, he talked with us and all this stuff. And here's what Thomas says. He said to them, listen, unless I see the nail marks on his hands, and I put my finger where the nails were, and I put my hand into his side, I will not believe. And once again, you think, well, really, like, all the disciples coming in and saying this, and he's like, I won't believe, like, wouldn't he have been stirred? We think he certainly was stirred, but there was a high value of spiritual realities that people trusted and believed in. The nature of spirits and ghosts and people and visions were very common. So it's very likely that Thomas says, listen, I know what you're trying to say, and maybe his spirit visited you. But that doesn't change things for me. Unless I see and touch. This is where Thomas gets that phrase, doubting Thomas. He can't let himself believe. He can't let himself believe based on the words of others. Fascinating, right? I don't think that it's fair to call him doubting Thomas. I get him. He is so deeply in pain. He's Friday-ing so hard at this moment, right? That he knows he can't be healed simply by hearing other people talk about Jesus. The wounds are too deep for him. It can't come from hearsay. The only way that any transformation can happen from Thomas is through an actual encounter. And it's got to be real. None of this vision stuff. That's the only way it can happen. Thomas is in a dark place. I'm guessing you know that feeling. The kind of darkness where when you're dwelling in it, you almost don't want to try to make it better. You know what I'm talking about? Even when you're given a chance. It doesn't always have to be like the big stuff either. When we think about this massive stuff that takes us down into the hole, little things can take us down into the hole, right? I've had a couple weeks where there have been little moments that have been absolutely trying to destroy me this month. Little moments that are not that big of a deal that want to just steal everything from me and turn me into a miserable human being. An example was about a week and a half ago, and this, I mean, it just goes on and on. Some of you have heard these stories because they're just so great, but like, I've had to go to the DMV two different times to contest an automatic violation of a vehicle that I didn't own, that I wasn't driving, that I had sold previously, and try and say, I have nothing to do with this vehicle anymore. Why are you telling me that I have to like do all this huge appeal process, and then find out that the person I sold it to never registered it, so they're driving a vehicle around that's in my name, so every time they get a bill, it comes to me. That's a problem. And but at the same time, I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. So I wake up one morning, and this has nothing to do with that, but it happened on the same day. And the first words that I hear as I'm kind of like opening my eyes are, oh my goodness, it's not going down, it's not going down, from the bathroom. So I jump up out of the bed, I run over to the bathroom to see this beautiful fountain of urine water spilling over the toilet into my floor. And my son's standing there going, oh, I don't know what to do. And so my first moment, within 60 seconds of starting my day, I have a plunger in my hand and I'm covered in urine water. Thankfully, that's all it was. Just a few too many kids peeing overnight without flushing the toilet. So a little backup there, thankfully. At least that's what I told myself. I did not examine any more carefully. So that gets us behind on getting everybody to school. And so we're behind on getting everyone to school, and we're rushing around, and kids are eating, and I'm trying to brew some coffee for, like, survival, and we're doing all of this stuff, and we get them out the door, and I'm late, and I need to clean up, so I get a shower, and I'm like, oh, I can't even get into the office today. I'm working from home in my home office because I just have too much to do. I can't do the commute, 10 minutes. So I'm like, okay, I'm going. I feel miserable at about 9:45, 10 o'clock. I'm like, oh, I feel like crap. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, I never ate breakfast. That's why. So I go upstairs, and I need something that'll, like, actually, like, sit in me. We didn't have much around, but I saw this pancake mix. This just add water pancake mix. So I'm like, okay, I can do that. So I turn the stove on, just, you know, whip up like six pancakes real quick, five pancakes, and I'm cooking them. I get our spray out. I'm spraying the pan, a little smokier than normal, but no big deal. And I'm cooking these pancakes, and I'm flipping them, and I finish them, and I'm getting my last one off of the griddle, and Bethany's around with Soraya, and she's in the kitchen, and I pick up my plate, and I'm about to take a bite, and Bethany goes, "Whoa, Keith, were you using cleaning solution to grease your pan?" And I said, "No." And she said, "What were you spraying it with?" And I said, "I was spraying it with, oh, this is our kitchen cleaner. This is what we use. We make our own little oil spray." And in my pseudo darkness, I wasn't thinking straight. And so I cooked my pancakes with kitchen cleaner. I have since added the yucky face. And I am fuming at the world. I am in, like, no joke. I know this, I'm making light of all this, but I'm in a really dark place at this moment, like a really dark place. And Bethany's like, "I'm just angry." And she's like, she thinks this is hilarious, right? Oh. Not good for marital movement here at this point. But so she's like trying to like keep it together, and I'm trying to keep it together, but in a completely different way. And she's like, "Keith, I'll make you something." And I say, "No, I don't want anything. I'm not eating. I'm going," and I go back to my office. Like, because even when offered the chance, I was so far in the darkness that when someone gave me the chance to be out, I was just feeding it, right? You know these experiences when you're in the dark and somebody can give you a chance to be out, an encouraging word, you don't even want to hear it. No. No, I'll be fine. You know, so the miserable day continues until I get the mail and I look at the picture of my old van with a bill for $134. One of those days, I make light, but when you sink into despair and somebody offers to help you out of it, you often choose to just keep dwelling. And in fact, even thinking that acting hopeful or conceding that anything can come for the better seems like a physical impossibility at a moment like that. I gather that was kind of the moment that Thomas was in the midst of here. So then we get the next part of the story. A week later, his disciples are in the house again. A week later, it's brutal, right? Like, what were they doing what was Jesus doing for 6 days? A week later, because we don't think that they would have just left and gathered together again later after an experience like that. We're expecting that the disciples were together every single night. But a week passes, there's different theories, we won't go into it, and Thomas was with them. Repetition, remember, repetition matters in the Bible. Though the doors were locked again, Jesus came and stood among them and said, for the third time, "Peace be with you. Shalom is present." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." He says to Thomas, "Listen, the marks are here. You can look at them. You can look at them. You can touch them." And we're not really told that Jesus winces at all. Jesus has been transformed. Because the story of Easter is linked to those wounds. But the story of the whole weekend is that Jesus doesn't just absorb the violence, Jesus transforms the violence. This is really important. This is the beautiful moment. Because Jesus' wounds transform Thomas's wounds in that moment. Thomas, who is the last one to come around in the groups of the disciples, looks and says to him in that moment, "My Lord and my God, ha kurios mou thei ha Theos. My Lord and my God, it is this amazing moment. Is this maybe the greatest miracle? Notice Thomas doesn't say, Jesus, you're alive. It really is you. That's not what Thomas says. What Thomas says is a transforming statement. My Lord and my God. John writes it in the first time anyone in the Gospels attributes the word theos directly to Jesus. The guy who trailed behind in this whole belief thing becomes the leader, the example of the first one that identifies explicitly Jesus as God. My Lord and my God. It is an absolutely amazing moment. And the point is that not just that Thomas sees that Jesus is alive, but that Thomas understands what it means. There's no more barrier. This is the great impossibility of the story. The great impossibility is that death cannot be undone, and Thomas sees that death has been undone, that God is true, that hope can be real. All of this is possible. And that means all of the other impossibilities of the gospel can be true too. This is where the trickle-down effect starts to happen, right? Forgiveness can be true and possible for real. Grace can be possible. The ability to love everyone. The value of the poor and overlooked. All of it. All the things that Jesus told us about the impossible kingdom and the impossible way of living in it are all possible because the greatest impossibility has now become possible. It's real. So the one who couldn't believe is the first one to say, my Lord and my God. You see this all throughout the New Testament, the trickle down of what's possible being seen in a new light. Paul says it in Philippians 4. And boy, let's just talk about this for a second. Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength, or through Christ who empowers me. A statement like this has been cheapened to be used like in a workout when you're at mile 5. Right? I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. That is essentially akin. It's fine if you want to use it for motivation, but it's like akin to the famous Dory quote, right? Just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. Like, that's all the power that it has when you're looking at it through that light. Don't crucify me here. It's already been done. Taken care of. The real power that Paul is talking about here is that Jesus has done the impossible, and Jesus invites us into life with him, sharing his spirit and in his inheritance by trusting with him, and so we can do all things that Jesus told us to do, like loving our enemies, like forgiving, like having hope in hopeless situations. We can have new life. We can be healed. We can live counterculturally. We can walk in grace and life and love. That's impossible. Yeah, it once was. Not anymore. Yeah. This is the good stuff. So all of our impossibilities of life and of hurt and of character, and what can I become? And I'm so overwhelmed by the suffering in the world, and how can I forgive, and how can I ever let go, and how can I lay my life down, and how can I drop this addiction? All of those impossibilities become smaller reflections of the biggest impossibility of death being defeated. But Sunday happened. So much is possible. So the impossible healer comes to me and frees me from the condemnation of all of the violence I have done and is able to heal me of all the violence that was done to me. This is amazing. It's great. And it's completely unattainable, right? This sounds like such a nice, tidy story. The victory. But it's hard to believe what you think is impossible, what you're not even willing to hope for when love feels really risky. Sometimes Friday is all, oops, I already erased that, sorry. Friday is all, just imagine Friday's still there, is all that seems possible. And I think it's because of the violence. I think it's because of how we've often been wounded and how we've wounded. Some of you are bearing wounds right now, and the idea of Easter is hard because you know the wounds aren't going anywhere. You're walking with a limp. You know no magic wand and no religious story is going to get rid of that wound. You just know. It's nice to talk about this stuff, but you know that next week this is still going to be a wound in your life. And this is why there can be hope. Jesus' resurrected body. We have to go back and hear what John wrote about it. This is why we need to know that Jesus walked through the wall, okay? This is why John notes Jesus walked through the wall, right? Because we need to know that the resurrected body that could walk through the wall still had wounds. Because we think in the victorious life, we think that I don't have any wounds anymore. But we're told a story of Jesus' resurrected body, and it still has wounds, and that matters. Jesus comes to us alive after death and shows Thomas something extraordinary, and the wounds that he shows them are there, and they're still present, but they've been transformed. The same marks that confirmed the impossible of death, that all was lost and the death wins, now they become the landmarks of the new world. Jesus keeps his wounds because his disciples needed to be reminded of the whole story, the horrific violence and the rejection, that was part of the story, but it's over. And I believe that Jesus bears his wounds to affirm the value of our wounds in both our healing and our outward life. The fascinating thing about the fact that Jesus still has wounds is that now they are marks of God's faithfulness. Jesus isn't ashamed of them. In fact, he freely says, look at what God's done. Look at the story. Our wounds need not keep us in Friday all the time. And when those wounds get transformed, because like Jesus has a foot in this story with Thomas. He's got a foot in both worlds, right? He's got a foot in this kingdom of the future, and he's got a foot in the present physical reality. And that allows him to do things like walk through walls but still hold on to his wounds. We are invited to join in with Jesus in that journey. So our wounds get transformed and can be transformed too. But now we're not living physically with a foot in both worlds. But we are joined with the spirit of resurrection in Jesus. The Holy Spirit that was breathed onto his disciples is carried through to those who desire to follow. So that means that there can be transformation of our wounds too. If we think that the only way to be able to celebrate the beauty of resurrection and new hope is to be doing this whole thing with not having wounds anymore, we are missing the story that Jesus tells. And when the wounds get transformed, they can be a part of the story. The beauty of the God of the impossible is that when we're in situations of not knowing how God could possibly show up, that's when the stories happen that change us. You know that for a while we've been pushing you to be involved in this micro-change initiative that we started about 2 months ago, providing simple, interest-free loans to women in Southeast Asia, or Southeast India, I'm sorry, who are widows and who are fighting for survival for their families. And many of them are sick. Many of them have had husbands desert them or die. And we have been able to make two full loans now of $250 each. And we've told you a little bit about Ravanama, our first loan recipient. I want to show you a story from Krishnaveni. It's just a little simple video that shows you what happened. So Krishnaveni, let me tell you her backstory because she doesn't mention it here. What her backstory was is that when she was just trying to get her business off the ground and get started, she was hit by a vehicle and she broke her leg in two places and she spent 8 weeks in the hospital. While she was in the hospital, she holds a small breakfast cart that she sells. She makes breakfast food. So Ravanama, our first loan recipient, she sells vegetables on a vegetable stand. But Krishnaveni, she made hot breakfast on the street. And so what happens was this, a hay truck came by and swiped her cart and demolished her cart while she was in the hospital. So when she was finally healthy, she had no means of being able to provide, and all of her finances were completely dried up because of the hospital bills. So we found out about Krishnaveni, and we worked really hard to get a loan together as quickly as possible. And I remember about 3 weeks ago saying, we need a few more, I told you the amount of money, and one of you felt stirred in a special way, sacrificially, and I know it mattered, and I know it was a beautiful, holy moment to go ahead and meet that need and say, let's do this thing, let's finish it, now you can make this loan. And it was a beautiful, holy moment, and this is the result right now. So let me tell you Krishnaveni's story here. I'm going to read the words because it's difficult sometimes to read it on the screen.
Now, baby, let's try.
I'm Krishna Veni. I have two children. My husband died. I'm living with my mother now at her house. My father also passed away, so I'm looking after the family. My total family is based on a pull cart, a breakfast center. Recently, one hay truck hit my pull cart and that damaged. After that, we faced many problems. In those situations, you all helped so much. Thank you for your help. I'm the only person to look after my whole family. There are many people like me. I hope you will help those too and benefit from them. Thank you so much for your help. We remember you forever. This is the repaired cart that she was able to restore with the loan that we gave her. There's the hay truck. Yeah. Krishna Veni is not a Christ follower. But we make it clear that Jesus is the one that turned the impossible into possible in our community and enabled us to be able to help her and love. And our heart and our hope is that in the middle of her scars, physical very much, right? The brokenness of her body and the brokenness of her cart, that she can look and say that her spirit is being made new because of the love of Jesus through people on the other side of the world. There's a story that her wounds are beginning to tell. That would not have been possible without those wounds. With God, all things are possible. As we wrap, I want to talk about the word impossible real quick, because that's a sweet little catchphrase. So when we talk about the God of the possible, I can feel my own eyes rolling in the back of my head. I do that with my talks sometimes. Here's the thing. Paul speaks of the only things that remain in life when everything else is stripped away is faith, hope, and love. He talks about it in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And so when we look at the biblical movement of the God of the impossible, making things possible, nothing is promised in the physical world. Do I believe that sometimes God works within the laws of physics and does crazy stuff? I actually do believe that, yeah. But there's nothing promised there. What is promised about the impossible becoming possible, and this is so important, what is promised is that God consistently can and will empower us beyond what we think is possible in our ability to maintain hope, in our ability to trust Jesus, and in our ability to love, faith, hope, and love in situations that seem beyond love. God will make faith, hope, and love possible even when it seems like the most impossible thing. That's the beauty of all of this. He already has, and he forever will. There's one last verse in the journey with Thomas. And this is beautiful. There's one more impossibility. After Thomas proclaims one of the most dramatic phrases in all of history, Jesus adds to the first teaching he began in Matthew when he spoke the Beatitudes, he adds one more. Jesus speaks this series of blessings at the beginning of Matthew and Luke. And he says, blessed are the hungry and the poor, and those who long for righteousness. And he talks about how God is with people who are struggling and people who are seeking to walk alongside them. And then he adds one more beatitude, one more blessing. And he says, Thomas, you've believed because you saw. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Blessed are those who are one day going to walk along and they didn't get to poke their finger in the scars and say, my Lord and my God, because they are able to touch me. We get to be included in the story right here, guys. This is the beauty. This is the last impossibility. We all have been brought into this encounter. We've all been reminded that God breathes life into his people and empowers them to live impossible lives of faith, hope, and love. And because the greatest impossibility has become possible, all of the other teachings of Jesus, all this thing about the impossible kingdom, it is now possible. We can believe and we can trust. And by the way, believe, we say it all the time. We're going to keep hammering it into you guys until you get so sick of it when we say it. Believe is not a mental assent in the scriptures. Believe, the word pistuo means to trust, as if I am trusting this chair by standing on it. I do not believe that the chair will hold me if I'm here. I only believe that the chair will hold me if I'm here. That's trust. That's belief in the Bible. Yeah? So when we talk about believing Jesus, we're talking about trusting, not just in who Jesus was, but in what Jesus said about the world and the nature of the world. And so it affects every moment with how we live. We can be made new. The impossible gets to become possible with us. So on a day like today, we invite that spirit of resurrection to come into life with us. We think about Jesus breathing his spirit on us and empowering us. And what we're going to invite you to do, we're just going to take a moment and we're going to play a song that you can just reflect to. And what I want to invite you to do, can you imagine the disciples, by the way, when they were in that room hearing Thomas proclaim, my Lord and my God? Can you imagine sitting there as one of the disciples in that moment? I think it would have been unbelievable. We're going to put a mic right here. And as the song plays, I want to invite you, you do not have to by any stretch, we don't do that game here. I want to invite you to say the same phrase Thomas said, my Lord and my God, into the microphone, so that we might hear the different voices of those who came after. There's beauty in being able to hear one another say it. You don't have to, that freaks you out, or if you're not comfortable, that's fine. We don't need to have 50, 60 people say it. But anytime, just stand up and just get right up on there and then like, say, my Lord and my God. It'll be on the screen in case you forget the words. Lord be with us. We thank you that though it sometimes feels like Friday, Sunday has come. We thank you that this is more than just a story and it's more than just catchphrases about victorious living. It's a transforming reality that you change us in our woundedness and in our hopelessness and you bring new life and you make things possible that we didn't think were possible. Thank you for the love that we have as a result of that, for the way that we can love endlessly, endlessly, endlessly because we're loving with your power and not ours and with your spirit and not ours. Help us pour ourselves out. Help us be filled with you. Help us have hope, faith, and love for the impossible realities of forever with you, of true forgiveness, of real compassion in our world. Amen.
Breathe on us now. Fill us speak the word that heals this broken ground.
Lord.
Say what you will. Show us your will.
My
as we
Lord.
Breathe in the
my.
Very breath of God. Oh, Spirit of God, here with us now, giving us life again.
My Lord.
Lord and my God.
My Lord and my God.
My Lord and my God.
My Lord and my God.
Oh, Spirit of God.
My Lord. And my God.